This series of Kicking It Off is sponsored by Bazooka Goals, Airpitch, and 3v3 UK. Having been a coach for over three decades, I know how important it is to have equipment that's easy to use and immediately engages the players. Bazooka Goals is the award-winning pop-up goal that's the perfect partner for small-sided games and training. Remember, every dream starts with a goal. And if you want to take your games to the next level, Airpitch's unique system keeps the ball in play 95% of the time. And coaches, if you're like me and want to bring the best of football, futsal and street football together, then 3v3 UK hosts tournaments and festivals around the country, as well as having a great franchise program. It's all about fast feed fun. All three of these brands will help you create a fun-filled, vibrant environment in which to produce the happy, active, skillful players of the future.
Hello and welcome to Kicking It Off, the podcast series for those interested in sports, football and the coaching of young children. My name's Lauren. I'm very excited for you to be joining us in this podcast series, not only because we've created some really great content, but that also it's just been a joy to create because I get to work with my amazing dad, the legend that is Pete Sturgis. Hi, Dad. How are you?
Stop it. I'm really good. And we are having a great time.
We are having a great time. Just a little disclaimer, in the studio with us today is my little pooch, my little puppy, Dora, the golden doodle, who is currently lying on her back, sleeping, and hopefully that's how she'll remain. But if you hear anybody licking a bit, then it's not us, it's the dog. So welcome, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us. We've got a really great series lined up. We've got 10 episodes in total with lots of amazing guests, as well as myself and Dad. But I thought to start with, it would be great, Dad, to just talk about your journey into coaching and how you got into the work that you're doing and where it all began, really.
Well, like most children, when you're growing up, certainly if you like football or, as I did, love football, you dream of being a professional footballer. So following lots of trials with local clubs in the Midlands, it was deemed that I didn't quite make the grade.
No.
And so I played for 15, 16 years in semi-professional football. And I was lucky enough to be given the opportunity to become a player coach at my last club, which was Rushall Olympic. So I jumped at it before realising that I knew nothing about coaching and was really taking a leap into the dark. But it was one that I wanted to do because as soon as I'd made the decision, I just wanted to be the best coach that I could be.
And so entering semi-professional football, the world of a semi-professional footballer, you won't have been a child yourself at that age, so you won't have been coaching children. So what was the move from coaching adults into the world of coaching young children?
I had a bit of a career change where I went back to university. I had a pretty miserable time at school other than in PE lessons. And so I knew that I needed to learn a lot more and really get back into the habit of learning and reading and critiquing texts. So I went back to university with the aim of doing a B.Ed degree. And that led to me being in primary schools and obviously dealing with young children and the learning that takes place in the schools. And so that put me on a slightly different track. And then I never actually worked in primary schools once I graduated. I actually went to work for 8 years in further education. So I was qualified in one domain and then began to apply it in another. But there are lots of differences, but there are also lots of similarities when we're talking about creating an environment or helping people learn new things. So it wasn't that different.
So what inspired you to put your two loves together? Obviously, you just spent some time becoming qualified in teaching young children and how those young minds work. And then obviously you've got this love of sports, particularly football. So how did those two worlds meet?
Well, running alongside the degree studies, I also started my FA qualifications and loved it. And again, that light bulb moment when you think you know everything or a little bit, mm-hmm. you realise you know absolutely nothing. And so I used to attend the National Coaching Foundation. They don't exist anymore, but they used to be on at weekends and I used to go. And we used the lectures were about nutrition, about health and fitness, about stretching, about everything to do with athlete well-being and athlete development. And so I was just like a huge sponge that just wanted to, with the goal of being the best that I could be, part of that was saying, well, if you're going to do it, you need to make sure it's the best for the people who are in front of you. So I was gathering, I was like a hunter-gatherer, gathering all this information and trying to make sense of it.
And so you mentioned that you started your FA qualifications. Most of our listeners, I'm sure, will know the extent of your FA career and the legacy that you've left behind. So what was the move from those qualifications into actually working as a coach and that journey?
Yeah, that's an interesting one, actually, because for my sins, I'm a Walsall supporter, so I'm a big Saddler. And I had the opportunity to go and work voluntarily in the Centre of Excellence at Walsall. So I worked for them for 5 years, voluntarily. I don't know whether I'm allowed to say it, but I used to have to cut the lectures at the college where I worked half an hour short just so that I could travel along the M6 so that I could get to the Centre of Excellence on time. So those 5 years gave me that first introduction to supposedly talented players, but for me they were just kids who happened to be a little bit better than your average bear at football.
Yeah.
So, but it was a really a great opportunity, and it was also a chance for me to put what I was learning in the FA qualifications into practice. But it was also a very traditional approach, and I remember on one of my qualifications, the highest qualification that I've got, I was actually told by the assessors that we know you may not coach like this in with your team, Pete, or back at the club. Mm-hmm. And I just remember thinking, well, why are you assessing me using a methodology that may not be the best and most productive when I go and work with the children and the young players that I'm working with? So again, for my sins, that got me thinking about other things. And so you almost have to find your own way. And so I began to explore what that different way could look like. And it obviously led me into starting my own business when we relocated to the Northwest. And in the 3 years where I literally had a bag of footballs, I was on the phone to school saying, can I come in? I'll work for nothing, but I'll show you what is possible if you let me loose on your PE sessions. I think the schools were quite happy for me to do that because it released some of their teachers. But I didn't learn anything about football, but I learned loads about kids and about behaviour and about how can we make learning engaging, fun and enjoyable for the kids. And I think those 3 years really did set me on a path.
And that's what so much of this podcast series is about, that yes, everything we're going to talk about, we're going to, you know, funnel into football, but it's kids and it's their development and how at particular ages their development is so different. And hopefully that the more we understand what's going on, what children are developmentally, physically, emotionally and socially capable of, that can help us influence how we work with these young children. Yeah. So it's great. And I remember those days when you would be off with, you know, the bag of balls and you'd just be going here, there and everywhere. And as your daughter, I feel like, not to say I was a guinea pig to some of these practices, but you were, you're an amazing dad, and it's all about play and it's all fun. And I have felt that, and I have felt that not through a footballing, I mean, I'm sure you would have loved me to, you know, not have two left feet, but just, yeah.
It's, but you can throw.
But I can
you
throw.
You can throw.
I can throw. Listeners, if dad has left me with anything,
yeah, that's my legacy.
It's a hell of a right arm for throwing around as a ball. But yeah, play. And this is something that we'll come on to in some of the later episodes. So we touched on it a little bit, the DNA, because this is something that was quite a big part of your career. I remember conversations around the dinner table of hearing you talk about your work, and the DNA was always something that was, it felt, as I was listening, really important. So as I've learned from doing these podcast series and becoming really passionate in your line of work as well, what the DNA is and what it stands for and what it means. So how, where did the DNA begin from in your career? And
yeah, I mean, informally, it was probably bubbling under, just underneath the surface, when from working for myself for 3 years, I then worked at Derby County for 4 years. And I think that gave me another lesson in, crikey Pete, you're out your depth here, we need to learn quickly. But those 4 years were really about formulating a philosophy, formulating a way of developing young players. I tried to take my thinking and my work to the next level. And then when I left Derby County, I was lucky enough to be offered a job at the FA. And I think working with the skills program almost gave me the opportunity to test and to have a dry run at what the DNA might look like, even though at the time it was not on the table, it wasn't in existence, but all the ingredients were there. And so when Dan Ashworth came to the FA, who really did shake up how we thought about what our international teams would look like, how they were prepared, and really what the future could look like if we took some really bold decisions now. When Dan came on board and presented around the DNA for the senior teams and the development teams underneath that, I just had a massive light bulb going off, thinking all of my thinking and my previous work would lend itself to starting the DNA work really early. And so players would grow up in a pathway that was absolutely immersed in what Dan wanted for, you know, players who were much older. So I approached Dan and I said, Dan, I think I can start this whole process off really early. And to be fair to Dan, he just says, get on with it. And I felt free. You know, when somebody has trust in you and they say, I don't think he ever said, I think you can do it. I told him I could do it. But he just put so much faith in me. I didn't want to let him down, but I also didn't want to let the kids down. So I thought this DNA for the foundation phase has got to be as good as it can be.
And so what influences or what research or how did it come to be? Obviously, we know that the passion was there. We know that the enthusiasm and the will for this to exist and the will for this to be successful, all of those things were there. So what other components did you need to gather before then before the foundation phase was created and therefore they're delivered?
Yeah, well, we had quite a long consultation period, both internally, but with other sports as well. So good friends within cricket, within rugby. We consulted widely on they weren't early years programs, but they were also thinking what would be best if children chose cricket or rugby really early on, and what could that look like? Even though football at the time was the biggest sport for most young children to try. So that external consultation and lots of internal consultation, because I put together a DNA foundation phase team of people who were absolutely brilliant in checking and challenging, but also contributing so that it was a real team effort. I was also studying for a master's at the same time. And when you start looking at all of the research around development, and that is in sport and in child development, when you're looking at creativity, when you're looking at the environment, it's just a mass of information that you're trying to make sense of, not just so that you understand it, but then the critical thing is, well, what does that mean for anybody doing the job that I'm doing or producing the kind of program that we were trying to produce? But it was just something that we all threw ourselves into. And I think hopefully that shone through when the content and the information started coming out.
It sounds like you were in a place, yourself and the team, of absorbing so much information and then having to condense that in bite-sized chunks for coaches that was then easy to understand, easy to apply, and with the understanding that you're not going to see results overnight. This is really, we're playing the long game here, mm-hmm. because we want to capture these kids as early as possible in whatever sport that is. And it's great that to hear that so much advice was taken from other sports, because we do talk about that a lot as well in podcasts, that actually, how amazing is it as a coach if we're just inspiring young children to have a healthy relationship with their body and moving and physical activity? And yes, we want to, you know, we're focusing more on football. So, you know, we will cater the conversation to that. But then in general, we can inspire a new generation that are healthy, healthy bodies, healthy minds. So to take in advice from other sports, I think is just good practice, whatever you're doing.
It was productive because it felt as though it was a really close collaboration, and everybody was just trying to do the best for the children.
Yeah.
One of the real critical things that worked well, we did so much filming for the DNA, which is a bit risky because we went to all parts of the country. We worked with lots of different groups of children. But in using grassroots children, we could almost use all of their behaviours, all of their little idiosyncrasies, all their little foibles to actually shine a light on and say, it may never be perfect, but when you see this or when this happens, mm-hmm. or, you know, if you're worried about this, we could actually bring it to life through films or short clips.
Yeah.
And then there'd be some content around it to just explain, don't worry, you know, this is probably happening. This is due to where the children are developmentally, and everything's fine. Think about doing this, 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 and this. And I think that gave us so much engagement with the grassroots community who, if this DNA is going to work, they have to be the people who take it out to the thousands and thousands of children that they work with, in order to produce this groundswell of understanding and really commitment to saying, we've got to get this right for our young children.
And so you mentioned there kind of breaking it down into sections. I know that the foundation phase, you've got four corners. You've spoken about four corners. How did they come about, and how did you decide, four is the magic number for breaking it down? And obviously, well, when we go into talking about these corners, they've each got a title and all of the info that falls in underneath those. How?
Well, I mean, the easy answer is it was down to a gentleman called Craig Simmons, who unfortunately passed away just a few weeks ago. A huge loss to football, the FA, and being such a really nice guy It's just such a loss for everybody. But Craig had been working on this, and we adopted it, certainly when I was at the FA, to be part of all of our qualifications. Because I can hear Craig saying it now, that you might think all the problems lie in the technical corner with football, but if you don't get the social and psychological side right first or as well, then it's never going to work. So Craig was absolutely instrumental in saying, these four corners, and some people have tried to separate them out and make five, if you call it the technical and tactical. Mm-hmm. But Craig was the one who really pushed home and consolidated the importance of the social development, the environment, and also the psychological, you know, the self-esteem, the confidence. All of those aspects have to go hand in hand with anything that happens technically and physically.
So there's the social corner, the psychological corner.
Physical and technical.
Physical and technical. And the to see a child's development through and for it to be well-rounded, you have to touch on all those four corners.
Absolutely.
Because, again, if you're just drilling a child in the technical aspect, no, you need to get better on the ball technically, you're... Yeah, there's a lot that's being missed there, and you run the risk of your coaching sessions not meeting the wider needs of a child. And at the end of the day, this is a child that has come to you, they've given up their time, their family has given up time so that the child can attend this session to not just be drilled like a maniac, that you have to see the child as a child. They're a young person, they're growing, they're learning, there's a lot that they don't know. And again, in all of the amazing conversations that you'll hear, listeners, throughout the rest of this series, that's so much, we really hammer home that point that you just have to see the child first. Let's not see a potential player first and the child's other needs as secondary. You have to just look at this child and all of their amazing potential, whatever they go on to do.
Yeah. And us as coaches, I mean, we're responsible for creating the environment and also structuring the learning. So we are very much teachers. Our subject just happens to be the game of football. Mm-hmm. But I think all of the things apply. So we want coaches to be the most informed, the most effective teachers of young people. And to do that, you have to understand little Johnny or little Susie who's mm-hmm. stood in front of you as much as you have to understand anything that you might learn about football. For me, the passion is always being about what is happening with the young child. And if I know a little bit more about that, then that might help me provide football activities that are absolutely more appropriate for the development of that young person.
And it's really exciting. In next week's episode, it's a really amazing conversation. I'm really excited for this episode to go out. We went down to Birmingham and we visited Chris Pascal, who is the director at the Centre for Research in Early Childhood. And this is a conversation that we had to kind of condense and we had to kind of call time
amazing.
On it. Chris is fantastic and she's an expert in child development, and it was a real privilege to get to go and speak to her. And the two of you talking together, it's a conversation that could have gone on for hours. And I'm sure should have gone on for hours because there were so many amazing golden nuggets of info in there. So we'll leave this episode here and leave the listeners wanting more, hopefully. But please do join us next week where we'll be talking with Chris Pascal. It's a really fascinating conversation. Thanks so much for joining us. Dad, thanks so much for talking us through your journey as a coach, and really looking forward to the rest of this podcast series and the rest of the stuff that we're going to be talking about.
So am I.
And thanks, Dora, for being nice and quiet.
Thanks again to our sponsors, Bazooka Goals, Airpitch and 3v3 UK, for helping us to create the perfect environment to develop happy, active and skillful players.